All right, guys, I've been waiting for this one. Have you started holiday shopping yet? If you're like me, 2020 has felt like the longest year, yet here we are, getting ready for the holidays. And just like most everything else, even shopping looks a little bit different, and that's where Sally Sue Collections comes in. They're an online boutique with personalized goods to fit your taste and style, and there's plenty of fun and sassy items in stock and ready to ship. Mugs to tumblers to shirts and hats and gifts for our amazing teachers and frontline workers, SallySueCollections.com has you covered. Give the gift of thoughtfulness this year and stand out with fun and unique items, and you'll also be supporting a local business. And that's what this whole thing is about. Shop local, support local. With SallySueCollections.com, your shopping experience is 100% contactless. And keep in mind that due to the volume of online shopping this year, orders are anticipated to be high. So what does that mean for you? Shop early and then kick back and enjoy your time with friends and family. There's never been a better year to plan ahead, shop safely, and find those special gifts for your loved ones, friends, and colleagues. And that's where SallySueCollections.com comes in. Visit them. SallySueCollections.com. Get in there, get your gifts, and have a rocking end of the year. All right, guys, you know that this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Hepias. Hepias is your number one place to go for premium CBD products at a fraction of the cost. This is perfect for any first-time user and for the veteran user. There's no THC. It's locally sourced and third-party tested, so you don't have to worry about paying for any fancy celebrities or a drug test. These guys have something for everybody, and I personally enjoy their products. In fact, my favorite one's the Sleep Aid, so go check them out, hepiasmed.com. HEPIUSMED.com. Right in time for the holiday seasons. Again, go check them out, happiestmed.com, and have fun. All right, guys, so today I got to talk to the amazing Stacy Steck, who came from the military background but always loved woodworking and everything that that entailed. And in fact, when he ended his time in the military, a story that you'll love to hear, you'll get to hear that in the show. But as he ended his time in the military, he found his love for woodworking, and he started his own business. We did this via Zoom, so he was right in his shop when he did it, which was a pretty cool experience. And if you ever need anything in that realm, go check him out. You can find him on Stacy Steck, hit on Facebook, just type in that name, reach out to him. He's really talented, really fun, and he has a lot of good business insight. So please welcome Stacy Steck, and I hope you enjoy the new episode. Welcome, everybody. This is Dalton Jensen, and you're tuning into The Thinking Project. Hey, can you hear me, boss?
I can hear you. How about me?
Yeah. It looks good. Sorry. So my computer's right here and my camera's up here. So I'll look at my camera, but periodically I'll look down at my computer.
Fair enough.
Cool, man. So remind me your name again.
So for all intents and purposes, let's just use my first name, which is Stacy.
Okay, cool. That works. I had a really good friend in high school named Stacy. He was awesome, man. I like that name.
family and friends use my middle name, but it's hard for people to remember. So, okay.
Fair enough.
So it makes it easy just for like general public or businesses to use Stacy, and it makes you chuckle and laugh and at the end of the conversation, right?
Yeah, man, I can totally dig it. So you're back here in your shop right now?
I am. Yes. I'm currently in my garage right now, but just signed a contract for a new space. So I'm actually moving to a commercial building here in the next month or two.
That's sweet, man. So you got enough business during this crazy year to move.
Well, I've kept busy enough. Right. And that's been a huge relief. You know, when COVID started, I had about an 8-week lead time, but kind of during the months of it, it dropped from 8 weeks down to about 2
is about as
far. I got to still work.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes, you know, you just got to go for the little stuff. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's good just to be grateful to work, you know, because especially during this crazy year, man.
For sure. Yeah. I'm glad I'm surviving it.
Yeah, seriously. So what kind of, you know, you make custom furniture, right?
I do.
Okay, cool. So how did you get into that? Has it been like a lifelong career for you, a lifelong passion, or was it something that you picked up, you know, fairly recent?
Well, I guess to answer that, I need to know like how much of the meat and potatoes do you want of this, right?
I want all the meat and potatoes.
Okay. All right. So
I'm fat, man. I want it all.
So my dad was actually a hobbyist woodworker, right? So growing up with him, I was always kind of had some exposure. Now he owned a glass company, and so working with tools and things was just kind of in the family. So he was a tradesman, but he had a little tiny chopsmith, which is just like a 7-in-1 machine that he kept in the bedroom in the basement. But so I remember, you know, being 4 or 5 years old and wanting to go down and help my dad, and he let me sweep up sawdust, or he might let me just blow around with the air chuck or something like that, right? And so I'd be so excited to be working with dad, and then I'd be sent off to bed, and he'd keep on working, and my bedroom was right above that shop, so I'd hear it as I was going to sleep. And so that was kind of like the first introduction to woodwork. And so my dad being a hobbyist, I was always kind of around with it. But, and while I developed skills and talents with him, I really didn't care about it until I was much, much older. I did the high school wood shop, of course, and that was just a good pastime. But I really didn't get into it until I was probably about 24. And I'm 32 now, for context. And what it was is I had a daughter who was growing out of her crib, and we have another child on the way. And so I told my wife, Amelia, you know, I have not worked with my hands in 6-7 years because I was in the military as an air traffic controller.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So I'm like, I miss working with my hands. I know they have a wood hobby shop on base. What do you say I go build a bed for my 3-year-old here and get it going? And so I went and did that, and I started working on the bed and getting refamiliarized with tools. And I'm just like, whoa, hey, like, I forgot how much fun this is. And so I hung around at that hobby shop for about a year, you know, just on and off on the weekends.
Wow.
And every time I went, it was magic. And that was just kind of the wake-up call, the realization that I want to do this for a living.
Yeah.
So holy, I got out and went for it.
That's sweet. So you figured that out while you said you were in the military.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. And that's actually a really cool story, you know, going from the military to this. Did you have any other plans, like, you know, other than woodworking when you were like trying to figure out what your next move was? Or were you going to be a lifer in the military and you decided to make this career change?
You know, I had signed up and had planned to do 20 years in the military. But they had different mentalities and mindsets. They wanted 3,000 people of my rank cut back in 2013.
Oh, wow.
And I got put into one of the lucky slots of those to get cut. And so they gave me an honorable discharge and things. They just said, hey, we're just looking to reduce forces. So you're kind of the age, the rank, people were trying to cut. Will you please leave? So I said, yeah, sure, no problem. I've got other options that I can go do, right? I've got family back home that can give me a job. And so when I got out, and I was in, my last duty station was in England. So I hadn't seen my family for years. So I was having to move back home and live with mom and dad for a little bit and get readjusted and find a new career path. And I asked my dad, I'm like, hey, dad, I really love woodworking. I've been doing it for the last year. And is there anybody who could take my skills further, who could teach me, mentor me? And he says, yeah, son, there's a guy just a couple houses down who owns a furniture shop, does custom work for the LDS church, putting things into temples. Maybe you should go talk to him. So I caught up with the dude and he offered me a job. So I just kind of dove right into it.
Wow. Holy cow. That's way cool, man. And as you're going through this whole process, you know, when you're in the military, did you think that, like, what was your original plan?
Oh gosh, my original plan was,
you know what? Your original plan was to stay 20 years, right?
Well, yeah. So I actually enlisted when I was 16.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So, wow. 16. That's crazy.
They required me to graduate high school first before I could actually do it. So I did 2 years of reserve.
Okay.
And then I got in when I was 18, but I had signed up at 16. So there I am, 18 years old. And I'm like, okay, 20 years in, I'll be 38 years old and I'll have a retirement paycheck, you know, and I can't remember the numbers exactly, but I think a retirement paycheck projected for me was going to be like, $2,500. So I'm like, so I'm like, all right, so I'm going to take that, I'll be 38, I'll get out, and that retirement check will just be my mortgage payment. Then I can just go get another job and who knows what.
Yeah.
And that will pay all the bills for food, for medical, all those kinds of things. So that was my plan.
Yeah.
Was just write up and get that $2,500 for the rest of my life.
Holy cow. Are you glad that your path changed? Or how do you feel about it?
It's a bit mixed, to be honest. Yeah,
a little bittersweet. I mean, I imagine going into the military at 16, thinking that this is going to be your life, and then having something like that happen in 2013, I mean, probably kind of hurt.
It did. Like I said, I was kind of chosen against my will to be one of the ones to get out. And so I was a little upset about that, but upon reflection, I mean, I've got to spend time back with my family. I'm born and raised in Utah, and it's where I love to be. I love the four distinct seasons that Utah offers. All my family's here. So coming back was super sweet for me. And then being able to dive into this new career path, which is very rewarding for me, because with woodwork, how good you are and how much effort you put into it, there's a physical manifestation of that skill. As an air traffic controller, it didn't matter if I was the best or the worst, as long as airplanes on the ground said enough. And there was no incentive to be the best. There was no incentive to study those books and know every single rule. So I like having something tangible that I can, I guess, showboat.
Yeah. Well, I think you bring up a really good point that a lot of like business owners get into. And that's like, I think small businesses are really my favorite because you get to see individuals like yourself really shine in their opportunity. Like they really take pride. Even in services, you know what I mean? Like I've interviewed accountants and stuff who really take pride in doing their best work. And you have like a physical manifestation of, I am like, you know what I mean? Like I'm clearly better than going to Home Depot or Lowe's for a custom piece or RC Willie for a custom piece of furniture. You know what I mean? And so that's why I love small businesses so much, because there's nothing like the passion. Like when someone really loves it, like that's the secret ingredient. You know what I mean?
You absolutely have to love what you decided to do, because that beginning, it's rough. I mean, I'm still through the grind, right? We'll get into that a little bit.
How long have you been in your business?
So being that I got out in 2013, it was February of 2013, and immediately dove into woodwork. It's, I guess, seven years.
You've officially had your business for that long?
No. Okay. Sorry. On paper, I've had a business license since 2015, but I was doing that part-time, just moonlighting, right? I want to be able to sell it, and I want to be able to sell legally. So I got my license in 2015, but I didn't turn full-time until, what was it? Probably February of 2019.
Wow.
So we'll be coming up here on 2 years this February. I find it ironic that February seems to be a magic month for me.
Yeah. Right. Hey, well, it should be. It's when you started everything. It's also my birthday, by the way.
There you go. Dude. So I'm since February 2019, to be the short answer.
That's crazy. What do you feel like has been the toughest thing in this first? Because, I mean, that would be considered like your startup phase. What do you feel like has been the most rewarding or maybe the most challenging thing that's been come your way?
Which would you like me to answer first?
Ooh, tell me about the good stuff. I mean, what surprised you? What was a pleasant surprise?
So getting a little bit personal here, right? I've got four kids, and my youngest was born in November of 2018. So only 3-4 months, right, before I went full time. But my son, he had complications at birth. He came out of the womb, not breathing, no heartbeat, and they were able to revive him. But he was without oxygen for a long time, and it did damage to his brain. So he's a special needs child. And so the greatest reward that I have is by being in business for myself. I've been able to, you know, be here at home all the time and be able to be with him and help his development and growth. And that's probably been the most rewarding thing about going into business for myself, is that I can stop and pause to take care of what needs to be done, you know, in my family life.
Yeah. And where
working for somebody else, if something comes up, they generally just say, tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. I mean, and that, yeah, dude, that's gotta be one of the hardest things, right? If you're in a position where you're working like, you know, a 9-to-5 or something like that, you know, getting time off for those kinds of things is incredibly difficult.
Oh yeah.
At least it can be, right?
Yeah. We go to primary children's probably every 6 months.
Wow.
So having that appointment, he has physical therapy with 3 therapists like every other week.
Wow.
And so being able to do all those appointments would be impossible working for somebody else.
Yeah.
So that's been the main thing, is that I can still focus on family at my leisure.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I love that too. And one of the reasons I love bringing on, you know, business owners, especially small business owners, are these kinds of stories, right? Like, you know, you could go to these big places and get furniture or whatever, and you might even be able to go find it cheaper. I don't know what your pricing's like, but that's what I assume, right? But it's so cool to hear these stories and know, like, you're getting an amazing product for a good deal, and you're also supporting someone's whole life. You know what I mean? And to be able to see like the back end of those things is something that I find like really special, and why I really like being like a champion of small business owners. You know what I mean? Because you don't get that same story when you go to Amazon or when you go to Home Depot. You know what I mean? Like, you might be supporting the people who work there, and they're everyday people, but there's something special about knowing that your money is going to, you know, something more than just like a corporation or something. You know what I mean?
It's very, very important in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
The small business guy needs it more, I feel.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, when you talk about in America, there's, you know, I think I read a statistic on small businesses versus like corporations like that. And I think it was like, you know, over 1,000 to 1, like that's how much small businesses outnumber these corporations. And when you're outnumbered that much, that means, you know, these small businesses, medium-sized businesses, these family-run businesses employ more people than corporations, you know? And so you can even still, you know, cause I'm sure, you know, your supply chain, how does your supply chain look? Do you get a lot of your materials locally as well?
It kind of varies. So
it kind of varies. Yeah.
Well, so when I think of my lumber supplier, right, my lumber supplier is, Intermountain Wood Products, right? But they cover 5-6 states here on the western side of the United States. So, I mean, they've got a pretty good coverage, but
yeah.
I mean, I feel like at least it's regional.
Yeah. Well, and that would be what I considered, you know, at least a medium-sized business, somebody who started, you know, and then grew it. Cause I don't, you know, I've met some small business owners who started real local and then scaled it as big as they wanted to go. And I would still consider that, you know, like a family owned small business.
It's true. And there's, when you think of like tool supply, obviously there's large manufacturers that we're all aware of, right?
Yeah.
But when it comes down to the smaller hand tools or where you go buy them, right? Who gets their margin? Who gets their profit, right?
Yeah.
I could go to the Woodcraft store, for example, and that's a nationwide store. And I have on occasion, for sure.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not saying 100%, right?
But there is a store that is more local to me, that's 15 minutes away. You know, they're just a little, you know, kind of mom and pop shop that's set up for woodworker hobbyists and even some professionals, right? And so when possible, yes, I do go there because I want to support, you know, small business just as much as anything else. So.
Yeah. Well, and I've had this conversation with people too, you know, it's almost for like day-to-day stuff. It is really hard to like, say I only do local stuff. That's pretty hard. And I would probably say impossible, but you know, like it's just, there's something special about it. You know what I mean? Like being able to frequent those businesses often. So I really like that, you know, and I really appreciate it. Cause most of the time, like you said, when you support a small business, you're also supporting at least two or three other small businesses, because while they may go to like bigger supply chain stores or stuff like that, there's also quite a few little dealers they work with. You know what I mean? Local, you know, marketing consultants, local digital ads, stuff like that, right? Which I think is really special. Like I think people forget about that a lot, you know. And so I, you know, it's just really fun to do that. But what's been the most challenging thing in your startup phase of your business?
Figuring out my pricing.
Pricing is really hard.
For all intents and purposes, you know, let's count my 1 year in the military that I was doing woodwork, right? So let's say that I've been doing this for 8 years now. I've spent at least six working with or for other people and learning the trade and doing those kinds of things. And I was perfecting my craftsmanship skills. I was perfecting the trade. But when I decided to launch and go on my own, now all of a sudden I had to do the prices. I never thought of it. As I'm working for other people, here I am. I'm just going hour by hour and it takes what it takes, right? But I never calculated how many hours does it take to make a table? How many hours do this task? I never kept track of those kinds of things. And so now as a business owner, it's like, oh, I got to estimate that or just try to find something on the market of similar and just cut price. But when I do that method, that doesn't work out for me because for some reason I take three times as long.
Oh yeah. Well, that's pricing, especially for small businesses, is so tough. And that's why, you know, I try to get stories out there because I have a phrase that facts tell, stories sell. And when somebody can hear the story behind a business, there's a little more value to that. But how do you go about navigating prices? Like, I mean, how do you handle that? You know, you mentioned a few, ways like you kind of market research and things like that, but what helps you determine what you're ultimately going to charge?
When I discovered what I was, when I was kind of failing at my bids in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. I told myself I had to start recording times. So I took some basic skills in my shop. So I said, well, how long does it take me to sand a square foot of material? Mm-hmm. And so I timed myself over and over and over again with different species. And I said, okay, hey, look, it takes me about a minute a square foot. Right. And, so I just started recording as much as I could as I was doing my projects. Oh, this task took me this long. This task took me this long. So at least I'm now starting to get a better idea. But it takes time to build up that history and find common times across projects.
Yeah, wow. That's a good point.
In the woodworking field, there's three different ways that people try to bid, right? Some people try to do materials times three. And I find that a flawed system because I know this is part visual, but I'll just kind of audio describe because I want to give you a visual. But so I've made five little boxes and they're all the same dimension, right? But each box was built with extra skill, right? Just stacking up. And the materials was the same amount of materials, but I spent extra time on each box with more skill, right? So each box is valued differently. So I'm taking that metric of three times material value and I'm throwing it out the door. I'm like, that doesn't work. Another one is set a shop rate of what you need to make and just charge hourly. Estimate your hours and charge hourly, right? And throw on your profit margin. And that's the one that I most commonly do. And the third one is just to hunt and fish around for what the general market's selling it for.
And
it might be true, right? As an example, I'm good friends with a cabinet guy and he's got a much, much bigger shop and operation than I do and much bigger machinery. Yeah. And his speed to make a box and my speed to make a box are totally different, right?
Interesting.
In an hour, and it takes me 3 hours.
Yeah.
Just has better machinery.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But on the flip side of that, I guess you could say that his overhead would be more than mine with the margarine pay for and those kinds of things. So maybe it evens out.
Yeah.
So I do take longer, but if we charge about the same price, then it kind of all works. But mostly,
then it all works.
For me, I figured out that no tradesman out there is charging less than $50 an hour for his work.
Okay.
Oh, I'm just like, you know what? I'll start there. I'm like, I'll do $50 an hour. You know, I threw it on the spreadsheet. I'm like, does this meet my monthly bills if I had 160 hours of work a month? And it more than covers it if I manage to keep the time and the billing synced up.
Yeah, right? yeah, for sure.
So, you know,
yeah.
Go ahead.
That's super interesting. I love asking that question, both of those questions, because I get so many different answers. And pricing is one that's a first one for me. But yeah, dude, a lot of people don't realize when you go into business, you're just like, oh, people are gonna buy my stuff, right? And and then you go like, and which is true, you know, I'm sure somebody will buy it, but like, for what? And a lot of the pricing has to do with your brand and your marketing and, mm-hmm. you know, and the value that you bring. And that is such, you know, people get MBAs for, you know, like pricing strategies. You know, marketers spend hours figuring out prices. But I feel like it's really cool the way you did it and your personal experience. I feel like that's going to help a ton of people, you know.
So being able to something that a mentor told me he's like, is your skill level? Are you new to it? Are you absolutely stepping into it for the first time? If so, you need to charge bottom dollar. Why? Because you need experience, right? So, like I said, I had 6 years going in before I went full time, and I'm very confident about my skills. I feel like I can work circles in quality, at least, around many people in the state.
Mm. There you go.
But like as a craftsman, I'm strong. As a businessman, I'm still learning.
We all are, man. Don't worry about that part, dude.
But given that, right? So they said, okay, well, working for an employer, you'd make $15 an hour. Okay, now you're working for yourself and you're still new, right? So try $20 an hour and just see if you like your stuff and gets you experience and then start sneaking it up and see if people will buy. But what the mentor said to me really is, he says, there's a win to loss ratio with your bids. He says, if you're winning one out of two, one out of three bids, you're priced too low. You need a hike, right? Because you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel, or you're the budget option. Everybody's coming to you as the budget option. But if you're only winning one out of 20, you're priced too high, or you are not in the right market for what you're trying to do.
Interesting.
So I try to factor my prices. They said, ideally, you need to be 1 out of 7 out of 1 out of 10 bids. You should be winning. So if you're somewhere in that range, then you're priced fair for what you're offering. Or like I said, you're just in the wrong. Go get into another barrel. If you're after more profits, more margins, then you need someone else to market to.
But you know what, though? That is so true. A lot of people don't think about that. You bring up a very good point. And it's so cool that your mentor taught you that. But you bring up a really good point. Like sometimes, if you're winning every bid, that's not good because those budget customers are, for some businesses, those aren't the people you want.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because there's clients for every business, and there's some businesses that's all they go for, right? And then there's other businesses that we don't want that. You know what I mean? And so that's a good point. You bring up a really good point.
Utah, you know, wherever we're at, where we're from, is notorious for being a do-it-yourselfer state, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody thinks that they can build something. So,
it's so true, man. It's so true.
And it bleeds into the market, right? Because you got Joe, who's doing it out of his garage. Wait a minute. I'm doing it out of my garage. Hold on.
Right.
But you got Joe, who's doing it out of his garage, right? He's just doing it for fun. That's all he wants, right? So he's just, he's making a coffee table and he's selling it for $100.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But he's using lumber from Home Depot or Lowe's or something like that, right? That's It's soft pine. It's not very good quality. He didn't have any mentorship or anything like that. He's selling it for $100, yeah. Right? For me to sell the same kind of coffee table, I'm trying to sell my experience, my know-how. Mine's not going to be soft. Mine's not going to get dented. Mine's going to have artistic flourish. That stain's going to be even and uniform. All these things, right? And I'm trying to move a coffee table for maybe $800, $900.
Yeah.
But because there's so many Joes out there, the market thinks that they should only be $100 to $300.
Yeah, yeah,
Trying to show the value of, I'm an expert in my field. I put in the time. I know how to make this the proper way. Right. And then trying to convey that value to others. That's another challenge.
Well, that's super hard. And I want to get into that, because we got a little bit of time left and I want to get into that for sure. But I had an experience one time where that's exactly, you're totally right, dude. Everybody thinks they can do it themselves. Now, this hit me like a ton of bricks because I didn't really believe it. And honestly, like when I first got into business, I didn't really care. Like I was like, okay, whatever. But I was selling cars, big manufacturer. But like we offered things at our shop, and the guy wanted, if you wanted to tow a certain weight with this particular vehicle, you had to have a transmission cooler, which is not a do-it-yourself job unless you have like a real mechanic shop, and which this guy didn't, like, because I asked him, but he thought he could. He was like, I'll just buy the parts and do it myself. And I was like, are you serious? Do you have a jack that you can lift that engine out? And we had a mechanic explain it to him, and he was like, oh, I didn't know it was that hard. And I was like, seriously, you thought you could do that? Like, it was insane, man. And that was my first taste of people, like, of how DIY people are here. Cause at first I was like, okay, you want to like fix your own, like, cause you can do some stuff on your own, but I just couldn't believe that people were like going crazy, like that far crazy.
And I don't fault the general public for wanting to save a dollar and try to do them themselves. Right. Sure. I mean, I do it myself too, but, I feel like there's times where you need to weigh what's more important to you. Is it the dollar value, or are you after a good quality product? Right. I'm trying to sell heirloom quality. I'm trying to sell you something that's going to last 20 years, 50 years, 200 years even. Right. That's what I'm trying to sell you but if you're a person who likes to do the trend, right.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine. Right. Go to these stores that are, more budget priced because their life expectancy is about 5 years. So and then you buy a new coffee table or entrance, vanity or something. So know what you're after and know what the value is. And so
I wanted to ask you this, how do you go about, because when I think of custom made things, whether it's like hand tailored suits, custom woodworking, custom cabinets, so anything like that. Right. When I think of custom anything, I think of like a how awesome at branding that has to get, you know what I mean? So how do you approach like branding? Because it certainly is part of it, right? Like you have to, there is a certain type of like, you can go to Lowe's and get your own, you can get your own coffee table or whatever for $15, but that's not what you're buying. So how do you approach that kind of story when you're selling?
For me, I'm looking for keywords. I tell my friends, my family, my business network people, I'm looking for keywords. If they ever encounter somebody that says, I just can't find what I'm looking for, boom, that's an immediate, hit. You need to go talk to Stacy, right?
Wow.
So
that's cool, man.
So that's one, right? Let me share a story that happened last December. I had somebody contact me and they said, hey, we are looking to have an indoor play place made. We're thinking about building a house, right? Like a playhouse.
Yeah.
But we don't want you to paint it because we want to paint it to look like a ship, like a boat. I'm like, wait a minute. You want me to build a house so you can then look like a boat? This seems silly. You realize I'm custom, right? You realize that I can build you a boat. Like, oh, you can do that?
Yeah.
I can do that. Yes. That's the joy of custom. You come right to me with your, with what you want, and we'll make it happen. A bathroom vanity that I did, right? A bathroom vanity's in standard sizes, whether it's 24 inches, 36 inches, or 6 feet, right? And I had a client who wanted it to be like 3-4 inches bigger for whatever reason than a 6 foot vanity.
Oh yeah.
And that's totally doable.
Yeah.
I guess that's the joys of custom, right? When people, the biggest key phrase is, I can't find what I'm looking for. Well, that's what I'm here for.
And when people, you know, say that, like, man, I can't find what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something really specific. I like that you mentioned that as a brand, like focusing on keywords, because those are things that a ton of people focus on. And that's where you can really, man, that's really good insight. How did you come about that kind of philosophy of branding?
I wish I could give you an answer other than the fact that's just the definition. It's just, it's just instinctive for me, I guess. That's what it's got. I guess for me, as I'm trying to grow my brand and as I'm trying to figure out what I want to do and where I want to take my business, I'm looking around me at what everybody else is doing. They're all going left. And I'm saying, I want to go right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me find something that nobody else is doing.
Yeah.
In the woodwork field, you know, there's been phases of types of styles, right? There's shaker style, there's colonial, there's Victorian, there's Queen Anne, right? There's all these kinds of styles.
Yeah.
And trends that come about. In 2008, because of the recession, the rustic trend hit, right? People had to save a penny. So we started doing reclaimed stuff. We started reusing old wood.
Oh, wow. And
so it became a fad. So all these barn doors, all these pallet wood furniture type things was an attempt for us to save money in construction.
Oh.
By not paying for the premium lumber, but actually trying to salvage lumber from old things to use that instead.
Wow. And
so for me as a branding deal, trying to get back to the point here.
Yeah.
We're always trying to figure out, well, what's the next one? What's the next trend that's going to hit? And you either need to be a creator of it, which is a really big push and really hard, or you need to find out what's starting to catch and immediately jump on that. And so that's what you do if you want to make the money, right?
Yeah.
I'm being gutsy. I'm trying to create a new fad. And even if it's just a local fad for me and business, right? Yeah. I'm trying to push colors. I'm trying to dye my wood vibrant colors that you just would not see. It's not paint.
Right.
You know, it's for the people who can appreciate wood, but it's got blues and purples and, you know, bright fire engine red and...
Yeah.
Or nice, you know, pumpkin orange, but being able to see the wood grain through it. And maybe that's just me being a woodworker that I still love the wood grain. I mean, you can paint. People have been painting for a long time, but I'm just trying to do something different.
Right.
Example, the very first shop that I got into, the guy my dad introduced me to, that's he really is the one who trained me a lot.
Okay.
He does something that's called marquetry. Or inlay that people might be able to be familiar with. But the concept is essentially stained glass with wood.
Oh, that's really interesting. How do you do that?
So the wood itself is paper thin. I mean,
okay.
We're talking, it's like 1/42nd of an inch thick.
Oh, wow. Oh my goodness.
So you can cut it with a razor knife. Right? And so you just cut this wood out with a razor knife in patterns. Say if I wanted to make a flower, I just cut all individual petals, just like you would a jigsaw puzzle. And
put
them all together, you tape it all up, and then you glue it to a substrate. So you just glue it to a piece of plywood to give it body, right?
Yeah.
pictures, business logos, all these kinds of things out of natural wood colors, or you can dye them.
Yeah. And so, oh my goodness.
That's one thing that I'm trying to do is get into like business owners' conference rooms with conference tables. I'm like, imagine your business emblem embedded.
Heck yeah, dude.
That.
You can do that.
Like, sure, you can do a sticker, but it's just a sticker. If you want to really brag about it, as you're all sitting around the conference table, like, dude, I had that custom made, that's wood.
That's right. That's the brand, right? Like, nobody else can get that. Like, you cannot buy a second version of that. That's mm-hmm. what I love about creators is, like, that's a powerful branding story. Like, you know, think about all the big, when I think about some of the big guys who make a lot of money doing things, like the guys you don't hear about, like they don't have to advertise because they're so custom. Like, dude, it's like, they say that. When people say that, I know I've got something really cool. Like, you couldn't get this anywhere else. You can't get it anywhere else. There's not a second one of these. You know what I mean? You can't go on my website and buy two of the same thing. I think that's super cool.
That's killer.
That's killer. Well, thank you so much for being here, man. I really appreciate it. How do people find you?
So I'm primarily on Facebook. That's my number one okay. platform. Right. I like engaging. Okay. I like talking. So they can follow me at Specs Custom Wood Shop.
Okay.
You can find my business page there. It's all okay. one word. I also have a website, which is Stecks CW. So okay. STECKSCW.com. So there's my website. And I'm starting to get into the other platforms too. Like I do have an Instagram. I'll get more there. But really, if you really want to catch me on Facebook. That's where I hang out the most.
Okay. Well, that's super cool, man. I think that's even how we met. I think we met on a networking group, which is amazing. I think a lot more people should do that. But I really appreciate it, man. I really appreciate your time. I thought it was amazing conversation. I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of good things out of it. So thank you so much, boss.
Hey, thank you. Take care.